Chapter 3. Historical Context. The preceding chapter presented a detailed account of the intellectual milieu and political developments that gave rise to a virulently anti-Western and religiously fundamentalist movement that radically transformed Iran's foreign policy and political and social systems. Concurrent political developments and social tensions in Lebanon provided the underlying structural context that presented the Mahdists among Iran's nascent revolutionary leaders with an ideal opportunity to enact their manifest destiny of redeeming humanity through the worldwide export of the revolution. More specifically, rising Shia population totals in Lebanon interacted with key components of the modernization process underway in the country, primarily urbanization and the expansion of education, which raised Shia aspirations while concurrently making them aware of their socioeconomic backwardness and political marginalization. These developments, in turn, led to a crisis of state legitimacy, as they generated Shia and broader Muslim grievances against the confessional system established in 1943 by al-Mithaq al-Watani, or the National Pact. The final addition to this perfect storm was the 1982 Israeli invasion, which, in addition to generating resistance to the Israeli presence that was soon led by angry Islamist elements within the Shia community, also highlighted the collapse of the Lebanese state during the civil war, which lasted from 1975 to 1990. This vacuum, in turn, was filled quite eagerly by Iran's new revolutionary leaders, who saw an opportunity to mobilize Lebanon's Shia population under Iran's direction, and in particular to effectuate the liberation of Jerusalem and the establishment of an ideal Islamic state in Lebanon as a prelude to its expansion elsewhere in the Islamic world and beyond. Therefore, this chapter commences with a discussion of the geographic, socioeconomic, and political conditions in Lebanon that provided exploitable entryways for the expansion of Iranian influence in the country, beginning with a brief discussion of Lebanon's physical environment and how patterns in physical and human geography likely impacted the calculations of Iranian planners. Physical environment. Approximately one-third of the land is arable, with one-fifth currently being cultivated. The population is concentrated most densely along the coastal areas, especially in the capital city of Beirut and the major population centers of Sidon and Tyre to the south and Tripoli to the north. The Latani River, which flows south from the Bekaa Valley before turning sharply westward toward the Mediterranean, is a major source of water and also provides for irrigation and hydroelectricity. Harris suggested that Lebanon's geography can be divided into three strategic zones, and his categorization provides a useful framework for understanding Iran's initial forays into the country in the early 1980s. The first zone, which could perhaps be labeled a core, consists of the Mount Lebanon region in the north, which, as the name suggests, is geographically demarcated by the Mount Lebanon mountain range in the north of the country. This area consists of the coastal areas north of Beirut, as well as the territory up to the Kernet El Soda Massif in the north, to the Shuf Highlands to the south. The strategic importance of this region derives from its proximity to Beirut, as control of the Mount Lebanon region allows for control of land communication with the capital. Harris also noted that the Mount Lebanon region achieved de facto autonomy within the Ottoman Empire sometime in the 16th century. Once known as Little Lebanon, this region traditionally featured a significant Maronite population, as well as a noteworthy Druze presence. In September 1920, France delimited the geographic extent of the modern state of Lebanon by adding the remaining two regions of Harris's categorization to establish Greater Lebanon. The coastal cities of Beirut, Tripoli, and Sidon were agglomerated to Little Lebanon, as were the peripheral areas of the south and the Bekaa Valley. Iran's initial forays were focused on this latter region, as this was the area where Lebanon's Shia population was concentrated. As Harris appropriately noted, for Syria and Iran, Shias are distributed conveniently between a concentration abutting Israel in southern Lebanon and another population in the central and northern Bekaa, well placed for logistics and organization. This situation has been useful for exerting pressure on both Israel and Beirut. The phrase "Belt of Misery" describes the southern suburbs of the capital, which in the past were inundated with thousands of Shiite and Palestinian refugees fleeing the south. The near-constant conflict until 2006 has meant that standards and regulations for public works and buildings are rarely enforced, and the area is best described as a slum. South Lebanon, from where Hezbollah draws most of its support, is generally considered the area bordered by the Litani River Gorge to the north, the Mediterranean to the west, the Bekaa Valley to the east, and Israel to the south. Green, hilly, and dotted with deep valleys, the terrain is inhospitable to large armored vehicles. Many of the region's villages are situated on hilltops, providing Hezbollah fighters with clear lines of fire and ample cover against ground attacks. With respect to the geographic extent of the resistance movement, Hezbollah operates throughout Lebanon. However, its supporters and most of its operations are focused in southern Lebanon, the Bekaa Valley, and South Beirut. These three regions represent the areas where most Shia live in Lebanon. South Lebanon, near the border with Israel, is the focus of most Hezbollah military preparations and activities, while the Bekaa Valley is used for training and other activities, as it is considered safer because of its distance from Israel. During the Civil War, Hezbollah was involved in fighting in Beirut, and while it maintained a security presence in the city, Beirut is no longer the primary focus of Hezbollah's combat operations. Much of Hezbollah's support comes from the sprawling slums of South Beirut, where many Shia have congregated in recent decades. This is also the area where most of Hezbollah's social services and other non-military activities are focused. Socio-cultural environment. As Hezbollah is primarily a Shia organization, it is important to understand the role of sectarian identity in Lebanese society, especially since sectarian affiliation represents the most powerful form of cultural identity in modern Lebanon, with the predominant groups falling under the two broad categories of either Muslim, Sunni, Shiite, Druze, or Christian, Maronite, Greek Orthodox, Catholic. Although recent exact population figures are not available, Muslims account for roughly 54% of the overall population of about 4 million, and Christians account for nearly 41%. The presence of approximately 400,000 Palestinian refugees, most of whom remain in camps, is a further strain on this delicate demographic map. About 60% of the Muslim population is Shia, with the remainder being Sunni and Druze. Maronites account for roughly 75% of the Christian population. Of note is the rapid rise of the Shia population since the mid-20th century, with Shia population totals tripling between 1956 and 1975 from 250,000 to 750,000. By the 1980s, it was the largest group in Lebanon, at 1.4 million, compared to 800,000 each for Sunni and Maronite. The country's sects are distributed largely along geographic lines, a phenomenon that was further reinforced by the Civil War of 1975 to 1990. The various natural obstacles of Lebanon, mountain ranges, fast-flowing rivers, and climatic extremes, facilitate the isolation of factions on the basis of clan, ethnic, and religious ties. The south, which shares a border with Israel, is predominantly Shiite, whereas the mountains have traditionally been inhabited by Christians in the north and Druze in the south. The far north, around Tripoli, has traditionally been a Sunni population center. In addition to the unique nonconformist character of many of the groups, including Maronites, who were considered Christian heretics, as well as Shiites and Druze that sought refuge in the area's mountains, exclusionary identification had been reinforced by decades, if not centuries, of communal conflict. The salience of communal differences was only heightened in 1920, as France, with the approval of some Maronite elites, such as the Maronite patriarch Ilyas Houayik, grafted upon the Maronite core of Little Lebanon, surrounding Sunni and Shiite regions. This enlargement of Lebanon to its modern-day configuration was achieved within the context of the peace settlement between Turkey and the victors of World War I, which also resulted in Beirut becoming the capital of the French Mandate for Syria and Lebanon. Additionally, under French sponsorship, the Maronite majority within Little Lebanon dominated politics and the economy of Greater Lebanon, with Sunnis afforded greater decision-making authority than would have been the case with the establishment of a Greater Syria, and with Shias dominated by both Christians and Sunnis. Description of the economy. Agriculture accounts for approximately 6% of gross domestic product, and a majority of rural households engage in agricultural activity at least part-time. However, agriculture is the sole source of income for nearly half of the population of South Lebanon, and repeated conflicts with Israel on the southern border have been extremely disruptive to the local population. The wide variation in topography and climate allows for the production of temperate and tropical crops. Fruits and vegetables, which require high inputs of labor, capital, and water resources, are largely grown along the coast, whereas agriculture in the Bekaa Valley is dominated by staples such as potatoes, tomatoes, and sugar beets, as well as hashish, which is a major cash crop. Cereals and olives are grown in the north, and wheat, tobacco, and figs are cultivated in the south. Unlike many states in the region, minerals are scarce in Lebanon and are mined only for domestic consumption, not for export. Throughout most of Lebanon's history, there was a severe bias in favor of the economic center, that is, the Christian and Sunni elite. The only real exception to this was under President Shihab, 1958 through 1967, a general who embarked on a systematic campaign to deliver the social justice he and his technocratic circle of advisors felt was driving the state's debilitating sectarianism. After the conflict of 1958, Shihab instituted significant changes meant to redress socioeconomic inequality, including imposition of an equal distribution of high-level administrative posts between Christians and Muslims, which resulted in a large boost for Muslims, and a dramatic increase in government spending. He also founded a central bank to facilitate state regulation of the economy and agencies for planning, statistics, development, and social security, and dedicated substantial resources to public works projects, such as roads, schools, and irrigation schemes. To accomplish these projects, Shihab used the domestic security services to weaken the political power of the ruling elite clans, who opposed these economic policies because their primary beneficiary was the poor Shiite periphery. This socioeconomic experiment came to an end roughly a decade later, when the commercial and landed elite finally put aside their sectarian differences to pursue their common interest in laissez-faire economics. The ensuing programs of economic liberalization eventually earned Lebanon the title of Switzerland of the Middle East, especially for its banking secrecy laws and loose financial regulations, notably the absence of restrictions on the movement of capital. It soon became a regional finance hub, where Gulf monarchs, socialist dictators, and nervous bourgeoisie spirited away their fortunes. Although this inflow was interrupted by the Civil War, the rush of liquid assets benefited well-connected elites, who used their access to capital and their ability to bypass the already weak bureaucracy to construct high-end shopping districts and luxury hotels adjacent to the slums and bombed-out buildings, thus further underscoring the division between Lebanon's economic elite and those on the periphery. Nexus of socioeconomic conditions and creation of vulnerabilities. The history of the Shia in Lebanon is suffused with a heritage of collective suffering that has a distinct communal character, yet also reflects the grievances of the global Shia community. Centuries of persecution by majority Sunni empires, as well as the contemporary Shia community's minority status in most of the states where communities do exist, create a powerful basis for political mobilization. However, as was noted in the preceding chapter, Shia traditions and Shia leaders historically promoted political quiescence, even submission, to perceived tyranny and injustice. Before the 1979 revolution, the Shia of Lebanon had no powerful patron, and instead composed the class of hewers of wood and drawers of water. In the great struggle between the Sunni Ottoman Empire and the Shia Safavid Empire, the latter originating in what is modern-day Iran, Lebanon's Shia had the misfortune of being a religious minority in an empire at war with its sectarian brethren. They were under near-constant military assault from Ottoman officialdom, the ravages of which were partly to blame for the principles of political passivity the community cultivated in the intervening centuries. Additionally, during the early and mid-20th century, the Shia community, and the Muslim community more generally, lagged behind Christians in various measures of socioeconomic development. As noted by El Kazin, rather than reflecting an intention of state policy, the Christian community was relatively more effective in mobilizing a well-developed private sector and communal institutions that imparted educational and social services without state support. One former prime minister of Lebanon, Taqiyeddin al-Soul, attributed this deficit to a failure to accept Western civilization. Quote, quote, Christian society is more advanced than Muslim in almost all spheres, even though the Muslims are catching up. This is chiefly because the Muslims took far longer than the Christians to open themselves to Western civilization. When some Muslims now accuse the Christians of enriching themselves at the expense of Muslims and exploiting them, that is false. The Christians gained their lead in the time of the Turks, through their own work and efforts. El Kazin also noted that the establishment of educational and social institutions by the Christian community predated the establishment of the modern state of Lebanon in 1920, and that those that came after were more advanced than comparable state institutions. This head start contributed to uneven communal socioeconomic outcomes by mid-century, with Christians surpassing Muslims on many indicators and Sunnis outpacing Shia within the Muslim community. For instance, in the mid-1940s, local ownership of banks, as opposed to foreign ownership, was entirely in Christian hands, while 87% of lawyers and doctors and 88% of engineers were Christian. Meanwhile, in 1932, the illiteracy rate of the Shia community was a staggering 83%. Among Sunnis, it was 66%. Later on in the 20th century, as pan-Arab nationalism and leftist political ideology swept the region, they also influenced Shia youth in great numbers. The Ba'ath Party, numerous communist parties, and the Syrian Socialist Nationalist Party appealed to the economic and social grievances that were dormant in Shia political awareness for decades. Yet, in a country so defined by sect, kinship, and clan, ideological parties based on more abstract notions of class were difficult to assimilate. As a result, many political platforms based on class grievances were rewritten using the language of sectarian identity, cloaking goals such as social justice and equality in a distinctly Shia language. Growing rates of urbanization, literacy, and exposure to printed material, as well as large inflows of worker remittances, increased the educational attainment of many Shia, but these changes were not mirrored by increasing employment opportunities. In addition to these factors, additional phenomena contributed to both the sectarian conflict and the rise of Hezbollah. These included the post-World War I process of dismantling the Ottoman Empire, the establishment of the confessional system of political representation, and the huge influxes of Palestinian refugees, which sparked the 15-year civil war that lasted from 1975 to 1990. During the dismemberment of the Ottoman Empire, the victorious European powers divided the spoils among themselves, with an eye more toward maintaining equilibrium between their colonial possessions than toward creating viable nation-states based on ethnic and religious divisions. Although the French sheltered and protected the Maronite population in the new state of Lebanon, often violently, the state's Muslim populations identified more with the anti-French and anti-British independence movements sweeping through the rest of the Arab world. In this context, the declaration of the Lebanese state's independence from the French in 1943 represented an informal accommodation reached between Lebanon's two key internal stakeholders regarding the significance of the country's internal composition and its impact on its external orientation. Specifically, the Sunnis realized that the acceptance of a greater Lebanon featuring a large number of Western-leaning Maronites need not inhibit aspirations for Arab unity, so long as the Maronite leadership accepted Lebanon's Arab face. For their part, Maronites realized that Lebanon was not sustainable without Muslim political participation and a close relationship with other Arab states. Yet they required Muslims to accept the uniqueness of Lebanon and its relations with the West. The confessional system was enshrined in two agreements, the National Pact, unwritten, of 1943, and later the Taif Accords that brought an end to the Civil War. The National Pact gave Christians the presidency and a guaranteed parliamentary majority, while reserving the positions of Prime Minister and Speaker of the Parliament for the Sunnis and Shia, respectively. Later, the Taif Accords redressed the fundamental representative inequalities brought about by rapid Shia population growth in the mid to late 20th century by weakening the constitutional powers of the Maronite presidency and granting Muslims and Christians guaranteed equal representation in Parliament. Although the final Taif Agreement provided the technical basis for a new government, it did little to address the underlying issues that would contribute to future outbreaks of violence. For example, it did not include an accurate gauge of the current demographic distribution or determine the fate of Civil War-era militant leaders. In most cases, these leaders, many of whom were responsible for civilian massacres and other crimes, achieved formal amnesty, and they or their family members and closest affiliates continued to dominate the political scene. In addition to sectarian tensions, which had simmered since Lebanon's independence until breaking out into full-scale conflict, the country was also a staging ground for continued conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. In 1969, the Cairo Agreement, signed by the commander of the Lebanese army and Yasser Arafat, established the legitimacy of Palestinian guerrilla activity against Israel in southeastern Lebanon and ensured that the Lebanese government would not act to restrain the Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO's, activities. The expulsion of the PLO from Jordan in 1971 made the Lebanese arena even more crucial to the group, and afterward much of the group's activity was carried out from bases on Lebanese territory. However, the weakness of the Lebanese state provoked both Palestinian and Israeli retaliation. In 1973, armed clashes between the Lebanese army and Palestinian fighters broke out as the Lebanese government was unable or unwilling to prevent Israeli retaliation. And 5 years later, in 1978, Israel launched a full-scale invasion of southern Lebanon to end Palestinian incursions into Israeli territory. The Lebanese military proved unable to rein in the PLO, even as the PLO's activities drew increasingly destructive responses from Israel. The demonstrated weakness of the state military led many sects and prominent political families to intensify their efforts to build up their own militias. The scales finally tipped toward civil war in 1975, when a spate of successful and failed political assassinations and large-scale reprisals against unarmed civilians soon turned into generalized fighting. Initially, fighting was largely limited to Palestinians and Falangists, right-wing Christian militias controlled by the Maronite Christian politician Bashir Jamayal. But it then spread to more general Christian versus Muslim violence. For the ensuing 15 years, Lebanon's confessional communities targeted one another, even as Syria, Israel, the United States, and the PLO joined the fighting, marked by a dizzying array of temporary alliances and broken agreements. Much of the fighting took place in Beirut and the Shiite population centers in the south, where the PLO was launching attacks against Israel. Nearly a quarter of a million were believed to have died. Nearly one-fourth of the population was injured, and the economy collapsed almost completely. Each confessional group had at least one militia, although throughout much of the war, several armed groups claiming to represent their sectarian communities were in direct competition with one another, carrying out reprisals against their own populations. Hezbollah coalesced several years into the fighting, around 1982, as the violence migrated from Beirut into the south and as fighting between the PLO and Israel escalated, culminating in a second Israeli invasion. Even the 1989 Taif Accords, which brought an end to the fighting by guaranteeing Christians and Muslims equal representation and making the Sunni prime minister and Shiite speaker responsible to the legislature rather than the Maronite president, did little to directly address Shia grievances, which were distinct from those of Sunni Muslims. The accords themselves were possible because there was no clear victor in the 15-year Civil War, and because the census necessary to provide an objective basis for constructing representative institutions was too dangerous and destabilizing to conduct. Thus, although Shiites were given more political power and representation, it was still far short of their actual demographic weight. It was during this time that an influential imam from a notable religious family, Musa al-Sadr, traveled to Lebanon from Iran, intent on mobilizing the Shia population outside the confines of either the leftist, non-religious parties or the few dominant feudal families who ruled the community in pursuit of their own narrow interests. Congruent with the emerging notion of dynamic Shiism developed by Iranian thinkers at the time, al-Sadr turned Shiite history and ceremony from a collection of passive ritual lamentations into calls to action. And by the mid-1970s, he had succeeded in establishing Amal, a Shiite militia and precursor to what Hezbollah would later become. Al-Sadr worked hard to lure Shia recruits away from the PLO and its secular leftist Lebanese allies, whom he accused of using the Shia as disposable cannon fodder. Although he lent rhetorical and ideological support to Palestinian aspirations, al-Sadr insisted that he was unwilling to expose the already poor and marginalized Shia of the South to additional suffering. And in 1976, when it became clear the Shia would bear the full brunt of fighting between the PLO and Israel, al-Sadr threw his support behind Syria, which intervened on behalf of the Maronite Christians to weaken the PLO and its leftist and Lebanese nationalist allies. Al-Sadr was also less antagonistic toward the Maronite Christians because he believed they were driven to violence by an existential fear rooted in their minority status and their own historical experience with persecution. Yet he also criticized the Christian political establishment for its gross neglect of the southern region of Lebanon and for its campaign of repression against poor Shia. This neglect in turn created a vacuum that Iran and Hezbollah were able to exploit after the Israeli invasion in 1982. Governing environment. Although Lebanon was technically a democracy for the 30 years before the outbreak of civil war in 1975, political and economic power in the state was highly skewed in favor of the Maronite community and, to a lesser extent, the Sunni elite. Although independence was granted under French protection in 1926, the French continued to practice de facto rule through their Maronite Christian allies, principally to prevent possible unification into a single state of Greater Syria, which the Christians saw as an existential threat and the French saw as a potentially ungovernable state composed of competing demographic groups. This combined French-Maronite rule proved oppressive and led to frequent clashes with the state's many confessional groups. Subsequent decades saw attempts to redress what many non-Christians saw as institutional obstacles to their representation, notably the National Pact of 1943, which enshrined representation according to the outdated 1932 census, as well as conflicts that foreshadowed the bloody civil war that would begin in 1975, mainly the 1958 civil conflict. The conflict in 1958, halted in part by direct U.S. intervention, later proved to be a sign that the legitimacy of the earlier pact was dissolving. The severe underrepresentation of the Shiite community in parliament, as well as government and civil service jobs, combined with its massive population shift in the second half of the 20th century, required more than marginal tinkering within the existing institutional design. The inflexibility of the confessional system, which did not allow for gradual changes in representation in response to demographic realities, created a political powder keg. Resources were also allotted to sect-based resource networks, which meant that the much larger Shia population received significantly less per capita state assistance. Meanwhile, the economic growth that did take place was not in the agricultural or industrial sectors, which is where most of the Shiite population labored. The fact that the Shia members of parliament came overwhelmingly from the landed elite and were completely unbeholden to their poor constituents exacerbated these problems. Syria was also a major player in the Lebanese political scene. Syrian influence and control were nearly ubiquitous after 1976, when troops entered the country with at least the tacit approval of Lebanon's Christian leadership, who reluctantly turned to Damascus after appeals for a second U.S. intervention after 1958 went unanswered. The Christians, for their part, feared that the combined numerical superiority of the Palestinian fighters along with their Shia and Druze allies would finally succeed in ending Christian political dominance. The Syrians feared the same, although their ultimate concern was that the rise in radical, leftist, pro-Palestinian Muslim opposition would pull Syria into a war with Israel, which they would quickly lose. During the Civil War, Syrian troops fought many parties, Christian and Muslim, and the most apparent pattern of alliances among the warring parties was the frequency with which they shifted. This reflected Syria's overall strategy, which was to maintain a rough balance among all the warring factions, preventing the dominance of any single group and ensuring a fragmentation of power. Fostered the impression that Syria's presence was indispensable to stave off anarchy. Thus, when the Maronites again appeared to be on the cusp of reestablishing their dominance, achieved with Israeli assistance, in the late 1980s, Syria acted to sabotage their rise by aiding the anti-Maronite opposition. In May 1991, at the conclusion of the Civil War and after the signing of the Taif Accords, the Lebanese and Syrian regimes signed the Treaty of Brotherhood, Cooperation, and Coordination. This treaty formalized the Syrian presence in Lebanon, considered illegal by many, and called for the establishment of a higher council, consisting of senior officials from both countries, and which would manage four permanent interstate committees for prime ministerial coordination, foreign affairs, economic and social policy, and defense and security. This agreement was followed by the August 1991 Defense and Security Pact, which facilitated greater Syrian penetration of Lebanon's army, intelligence services, security agencies, and interior ministry. In one notable passage, Lebanon was required to, quote, exchange information related to all security and strategic matters, national and internal, to exchange officers, including military instructors, to achieve the highest level of military coordination, close quote, while another required the, quote, banning of any activity or organization in all military, security, political, and information fields that might endanger and cause threats to the other country, close quote. Not surprisingly, Harris noted that the Lebanese government approved this agreement without most ministers having seen the actual text. Because of the range and depth of interested parties, both domestic sectarian groups and foreign parties, as well as the absence of adequate checks and balances, domestic politics in Lebanon resembled a patronage-based system. Consequently, the awarding of political office depended on personal loyalties rather than competence. These underlying conditions facilitated the communal politicization that provided the organizational scaffolding on which Hezbollah could be built. In this regard, the Shia awakening had more in common with the politicization of other Lebanese sects than with any universal Islamic revival. Still, individual actors, both religious and secular, played important roles in this mobilization, notably Palestinian activists, leftist groups, and Imam Musa al-Sadr. As we noted in the preceding chapter, al-Sadr, who came to Lebanon from Iran in the late 1950s, founded Amal, which, unlike Hezbollah, appealed more to middle-class Shia frustrated with the political elite and who railed against the brutality of PLO guerrillas who were engaging in their own occupation of the South. The disappearance of al-Sadr in 1978 and the decision by Amal's leadership to participate in the Committee of National Salvation contributed to the establishment of Hezbollah, which took advantage of the leadership vacuum left by al-Sadr's absence and Amal's apparent collusion with the Maronite Christians. The narrative emerging from Hezbollah in the early 1980s called on the public to resist the Maronite-dominated Lebanese government. Israel's 1982 invasion, which prompted Iran's penetration of the Shia areas of the country, also directed Shia anger toward the Jewish state.